Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our panel discussion here at the University in Innsbruck. I'm pleased to welcome our guests. Some of them have traveled far. Some are from here, rather close. I want to briefly introduce our panelists. To my left is Richard Stallman, who launched the free software movement in 1983. He's president and founder of the Free Software Foundation, and he has several honorary doctorates and numerous awards, as I also have mentioned yesterday. In 2013, he has been inducted into the Internet Fame of Hall as an innovator. To my left also is Professor Andrea Hemitzberger. She's chair of the Department of Strategic Management, Marketing and Tourism. She's also speaker of the interdisciplinary research platform Organizations and Society, and the academic director of the Brand Research Laboratory. Her research revolves around branding, brand performativity, visual brand representations, but also around tensions and change in the free software and open source field, among many other fields. To my very right is Nelson Gonsalves. He's teacher at the Department of Communication and Art at the School of Education of the Polytechnic Institute of Viseu in Portugal. He's also a member of the board of the Free Teaching Association, a Portuguese non-profit organization that's dedicated to the promotion of the free libre open source software, especially in educational contexts, and he's also dealing with 3D animation and arts and related stuff. To my right is Martin Bauer. He's chairing the Department 2/8 at the Austrian Federal Ministry of Education in Vienna. He's dealing with subject-specific education in ICT. That's what we call the IT didactics, in German didactic, but the University of Innsbruck has agreed on translating the term with subject-specific education as a synonym for didactics because of its connotations. Also digital media, he's author of many school books. He has experience both as a teacher on various levels and also as a CEO of an IT company. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming here. Our theme is Education 4.0? Sometimes it's claimed that there is a need to respond to the needs of Industry 4.0, also in education, that there are new developments going on as related to chatbots, to social bots, all sorts of virtual assistants, new internet developments which are challenging educational procedures, the structures, the institutional contexts, and we have, on the other hand, traditional values like users' freedom, and we also have claims for digital inclusion. Our question is digital inclusion desirable? And I'm inviting the panelists to give a very brief introductory statement to our basic question, to the question of the panel, and this way also explain a little bit more of their background. And later on, we'll discuss the statements and also open up for discussion with the audience. So we'll do it in two steps. One of our panelists has prepared slides for this introductory statement, so I wanted to start with those who don't have the slides in this case. So to my right, Martin Bauer, what's important in your view in this context of the question.
Thanks a lot. Good morning, everybody. As you mentioned, Theo, I'm responsible for the School 4.0 in our Austrian school system. And this is some kind of a strategic movement that we have done, or that we actually do, concerning bringing not only bringing digital devices to our schools, because this is what Chancellor Kern mentioned in his Plan A a couple of months ago. What we focus on is to bring the teacher competences and the student competences to our classes, to our schools. The School 4.0 is a strategy consisting of four pillars. The first pillar is the student competences, to enforce student competences, to bring new curricula to our schools. And what we do at the moment is that we bring a new curricula called Basic Digital Education to the lower secondary schools. That's aging between 10 and 14 years old students. So that's one main part of this first pillar. There are some other activities. Maybe we can come to this point later on. The second pillar, to make it short now as an introduction, is that we focus on teacher competences. Now, I think it is very clear that without teacher competences, we will not be able to bring all those competences to the students. So we need competent teachers, digital competent teachers, not only to work with digital devices, also to get this transition to the students, and to really work with devices, to work with digital tools, to reflect what does the digital way of living with us, what is it about, things like digital literacy, things like digital thinking, also computational thinking, and all this will be a part also of what I mentioned before of this new curriculum. So this is very broad, and we think very broad concerning bringing those competences to our students and to the teachers as well. And of course it is necessary to have some kind of infrastructure to enforce this, to make it possible that schools can really work, that teachers can really work with devices, if it is a bring your own device concept, or if the schools do provide the devices to the students and to the teachers. So it's about infrastructure, but it is not only about infrastructure, and that is a very focal point in my point of view. And the last pillar is about digital media. For instance, digital school books, for instance, open educational resources, and we focus on different actions concerning all these areas. And one project, one very big project concerning this pillar is, we call it EduTake. It is a platform where teachers can find any kind of digital material using very modern filter criteria and a very modern kind of searching tools to find material like something like Amazon, where you type in, you look for a book, for example, and the algorithm will show you other books that could be interesting for you. So yeah, this is one short introduction to what we do at the moment. And of course there is a lot of change at the moment concerning the political situation in Austria, so we will see what will be the next steps. But we are very sure that the digital topic will be very important for our schools also in the future.
Okay, thank you very much. Andrea, looking at the question, all the new developments and the claims for digital inclusion in order to overcome digital divides What's your main point in this context?
First of all, thank you for inviting me. Good morning, all of you. I do not think that there's just one main point with regard to digitalization and digital inclusion, because first of all, it's very, very complicated as a term. What does digitalization actually mean? And what I take from what Martin has introduced by now is that there is some common understanding of the digital as technology rather than what I would be looking at as a realm, as a space for taking action, very much in the same way as we're taking action here in reality. And this qualifies the term a little differently, I think. When it comes to digital education, I, from my side, I'm very much into it. I like technology that enables me to find stuff which is interesting. And I use a lot of that. I'm giving, for instance, or I gave lectures in online branding, not in order to make people just buy stuff, but in order to educate people of how to work with brands and how to make brands valuable for people, really valuable, not just as logos or branded objects. To me, digital inclusion is, first of all, it's positive to think of digital inclusion in terms of including people versus excluding anyone from anything that we have invented on this planet, which is very positive. But what I see is that it's very often merely about bandwidth and about having access to all kinds of things, which in the end might also kind of conquer your lives, makes you dependent on being part of the digital economy, and that to me is also very problematic. But I tend to see it differently. We have to differentiate about what we are actually talking about. I'm total fan of having access to information, which to me is not access to knowledge. It's two different things. And I think we really have to distinguish these two terms when we talk about digitalization of education or digitalization of information or knowledge, which to me is like some kind of oxymoron, which does not exist in the kind of way, not even when we talk about artificial intelligence. That's not knowledge. It's just a nice algorithm that we have invented in order to make things easier. But this, to me, are probably the main topics to be discussed here.
Okay, thank you. Nelson.
Okay.
Yes.
Not really used
What's
to
your
these
view
things.
On this topic?
So first of all, good morning to you all. And I'd like to thank the invitation and greet all the colleagues over here. My view, I have to do a previous explanation, if I may. It will be fast, I promise. I promised Richard 3 extra minutes, so it has to be really fast. I'm a teacher, I'm an activist, and I work professionally with 3D, always with free software. So my views tend to mix all this. I don't talk as a teacher, I don't talk as an activist, and I don't talk as a professional 3D user. I talk about all these three views at the same time. And this starts, this is for me an introduction to say that for me, education 4.0 and so on, it's a clickbait. It's basically a clickbait. It's not a real term. Next year it will be education 5.0 and 6.0 and so on. And last year it was 3.0. It's not really important. It's what they are trying to do. Who are they? We'll be discussing about that. But in a way, I'm really scared. Because this is, as I see it, it's all a big plan to make us go online for advertising. And that's basically it. So we can use MOOCs, we can use VR, AR, artificial intelligence, and so on, all those labels. And in the end, I have to ask, that's the only reason that I'm, well, it's the main reason I'm here to discuss it. Whom does all this stuff serve? It's the users, it's the students. And I think we are really far from it. And I hope we can discuss about this in a bit and maybe talk a little bit better. I have a lot to say about this, but you have your extra 3 minutes.
Okay. So a little deal on the panel. Richard, please. Richard Stallman will use some slides, so we as panelists will move on to the chairs for a moment in order to see the slides as well, and then move back to the podium. Yes, please.
So I'm waiting for you to move. This is the adorable GNU. So, please don't put photos of me into Facebook, Instagram, or WhatsApp. It's a surveillance monster. Please don't help them track me. And if you want to take a photo of me with a mobile device, please talk with me first. So, I campaign for free software, which means I campaign for freedom for people who do computing. Free software does not mean kostenlos. It means frei. It means that the program respects the freedom of its users. So a computer just gets instructions and executes them. But they come from a program. So depending on what instructions are in the program, they can make the computer, the same computer, do this or that or anything except the impossible things. So who gives the instructions to your computer? You might think it's you, when really it's someone else. You might think your computer is obeying you, when really it's obeying its real master all the time, and the real master occasionally is kind enough to let it do what you want, if the real master doesn't object. With any program, there are two possibilities. Either the user controls the program, or the program controls the users. There's no other way. So it's always one or the other. When the users control the program, that's free software. That means it's a program that respects the user's freedom and community. Why is this? Well, freedom is having control of your own life, control of the activities that you do in your life. But if you're using a program to do the activity, the only way to have control of the activity is if you have control of the program. So the programs that are under the user's control, those are the ones that respect users' freedom and community. So concretely, for the program to be free, it has to give you the four freedoms, the four essential freedoms. It has to give all the users the four freedoms. Freedom zero is the freedom to run the program as you wish for any purpose. Freedom one is to study the source code and change it so it does your computing activity the way you wish. Now, practically speaking, you can't really change the program unless you have its source code. Source code is what programmers work on. What's what a person can understand. Executable code is enigmatic. Even programmers can't understand it, especially when the program gets to be long. So a program can't be free, freedom respecting, unless the users can have the source code. So these two freedoms give each user separately control over the program. And that's absolutely essential, but it's not enough because most users are not programmers. They don't know how to read and change source code. And there's no reason why everybody should have to learn this any more than why everybody should have to learn to be a chef or do construction of buildings or paint or whatever. But they also deserve control of their computing. And the way they can have it is through collective control, which is the freedom for various users to work together to exercise control of how that program does things. So here we see a group of three users that have decided to work together. They don't have to register their group. The fact that they're cooperating makes them a group. In order to exercise this control together, by the way, the way this helps the non-programmer users is they participate in the discussions about what changes the group wants to make. This is how, and then the ones who know how to program, they make the changes. But they're all deciding together what those will be. This is how non-programmers get to have some control over what the programs actually do. So this requires two more essential freedoms. Freedom two is to make exact copies and give or sell them to others when you wish. Remember, free software doesn't mean kostenlos. We don't actually care whether you're giving or selling the copies. And freedom three is the freedom to make copies of your modified versions and give or sell them to others when you wish. These two freedoms enable the group to work together. If one member of the group makes a modified version, with freedom three, person can make copies and distribute them to some others, and they have freedom two, so they can make more copies of the same version and distribute to others. But those two freedoms are not limited to other members of some group that happens to exist today. You can distribute copies to anybody. You can even publish it, which means offering copies to everyone. So if the program gives the users these four freedoms in a thorough and honest way, then it's free software. The users control the program, and they can make it do what they want it to do. But if any of these freedoms is missing, then the program controls the users, because the users don't control the program. So the program controls the users, and its owner or developer controls the program. So a non-free program creates a system of unjust power, power for the owner over the users. This is why, for your freedom's sake, you should refuse to allow non-free software into your computer. You should escape from it, as we have done. This is why it's wrong to develop non-free software, and this is why it's wrong to teach students to use non-free software. This is the basic injustice, but it typically leads to others. For instance, spying. Many non-free programs spy on their users. It's standard practice nowadays. It hardly even creates a scandal. The industry has become so accustomed to designing programs to spy on their users. Some of this is for the global advertising regime. But you've got to expect that if you run a non-free program, it's spying on you. If you buy an appliance that has a non-free program in it and it connects to anything, it's likely to spy on you. Some products, even physical products, are designed to send personal information to servers, like the Fitbit. It sends the personal data to the company. The company then offers to sell it to the user. And I read about a sex toy which connects to the internet. So I suppose it can be used for remote lovemaking. It's a nice idea if it were implemented in an ethical way with free software, so that you could talk directly to that machine once your lover enables that. But instead, people had to communicate with it through a server in the manufacturer, and that server was collecting personal data, including data from things in the product that were only there to spy on users, like a thermometer. With the thermometer, they could tell if it was in contact with a human body at any time. So the only reason for this was to spy on the users. They built the product for the purpose of spying. There are various other kinds of secondary injustices, for instance, DRM, Digital Restrictions Management, where the product is designed to restrict its users. It's intentionally designed as the enemy of the users. And there are backdoors. For instance, the Amazon swindle has a backdoor for remotely erasing books. And in 2009, Amazon erased thousands of copies of 1984. Can you believe that? It's the fact. It shows that Amazon has the power to remotely erase books at any time. You've got to expect that with non-free software. So non-free software is an injustice. We, for our freedom's sake, we should refuse to use it. We should put an end to that practice. We should, above all, not promote it. So what should a school do? unfortunately, I don't have time for most of this, you see. But basically, to use a non-free program requires blind faith in its developer. And most of those big companies, they've already proved they don't deserve your faith. The only defense against these malicious functionalities is to have free software so that the users can remove any malicious functionalities if there were any. And this deters the developers from trying to put them in when they know the users have control. That's why we developed the GNU operating system, which is used with Linux, the kernel, to make a free operating system. But I better get to the point about schools. I should just mention that open source is a totally different idea that I'm not in favor of. The term was coined in 1998 to reject the ethical ideas of the free software movement. So anyone who describes me in connection with the term open source is unfortunately repeating misinformation. I've never supported open source. I disagree with them just as they disagree with me. So schools should teach exclusively free software because they have a social mission to educate good citizens of a society that is strong, capable, independent, cooperating, and free. In the computing field, that means teach only free software and explain why they're doing so. It shouldn't just be a mysterious policy that they have to obey. No, schools should teach all the students the civic reasons why a free society needs free software. And the school must never teach a non-free program because that's implanting dependence. It's the opposite of the school's social mission. The school should never do it. But it's like teaching to use an addictive drug, like tobacco. But the school also has to do moral education, teaching people the habit of helping other people when there's an occasion. So that every class should have this rule. Students, if you bring software to class, you may not keep it for yourself. You must share it with the rest of the class, including the source code, because this is a place where we share our knowledge. So it's not permitted to bring proprietary software to this class, except to do reverse engineering on it. The school, to set a good example, has to follow its own rule by bringing only free software to the class. This is also vital for the education of programmers because proprietary software conceals its knowledge, the knowledge it embodies, from the students, and free software offers that knowledge. To show their loyalty to the spirit of education, schools must, and also to help people learn programming, the schools must teach only free software. And I don't just mean formal instruction. I mean anything the school does to lead people to use a particular program. It should only do that when the program is free. The same arguments, by the way, apply to the textbooks. They need to be free. Open is not enough. Most so-called open educational resources are non-free, which means they don't meet the educational criteria of contributing to education and freedom. We need to develop free, again, I don't mean kostenlos, educational resources. I was sad to discover that there is a program called DigiCheck, which is meant to measure people's competence in using software. What it seems to actually test is whether they can use Microsoft Word. So even though I'm a member of the Internet Hall of Fame, that program would say I am totally incompetent. Not only that, but I will be totally incompetent according to that program for the rest of my life because I would refuse to learn to use Microsoft Word because I won't run it. It's a non-free program. I also won't install DigiCheck on my computer because that's a non-free program too. And I will urge all the students of Austria to make the same refusal in order to defend their own freedom. Well, I've gone slightly over, so I'm done.
Thanks for the introductory notes. Thanks, Richard, for the presentation. And it's, well, the starting question, so to say, or one of the starting question, I think it's been addressed to you, Martin. Schools should teach exclusively free software.
Yes. I do not totally agree with you, but I think this is not a big surprise. I think we have to see two different objectives that schools should follow. With the first one, I could agree with what you mentioned, and also that you criticize things like the DigiCheck as an example that you mentioned now in your speech. But on the other hand, we have to see that it is also an objective for schools to teach what people need in their business life later on. That's an objective for the school because the business requests this. And you know, I was teaching in a business school for 13 years, and we tried to teach free software, Linux as an operating system.
It's not an operating system. You're attributing my work to someone else.
Linux as an operating system, and LibreOffice.
You're attributing my work to other people.
Just a second. And LibreOffice as an alternative to Microsoft Office. The problem is that when students exit school and they are looking for a job, they need what the business, what the companies use. And what you mentioned now is you would never get the competence when you make the DigiCheck. I don't think so, because the DigiCheck does not really focus on only one product. So you can also make the DigiCheck with other programs, also with online applications, for example. So that's not only a question of Microsoft Word or Microsoft Excel. Of course, we support this, and the Ministry of Education has a contract with Microsoft for, I don't know, much more than 10 years now. To make it possible for schools to afford this kind of software. But the request is not a request from the schools. It's not a request from the teachers. It's a request from the companies. So I think this is a point that we have to think about.
Do you want to respond or should I respond?
Well, I'd like to respond. Software gives power to someone. If you're using free software, it gives you more power over your own life. But if you're using proprietary software controlled by a company like Microsoft or Apple or Google or Amazon or Adobe or some tiny company, doesn't matter how big it is, it's giving that company power over you. It's a system of subjecting people to power, and this is wrong. So it doesn't matter what businesses ask for. Should people be subjected to Microsoft or Apple or Google or whatever because businesses ask for that? Well, I understand a lot of people want to learn to use those programs, and I'm not proposing to try to stop them, but the schools shouldn't push people in that direction. I want to know if a student says, I demand freedom. I refuse to run Microsoft. Well, maybe you'll think that student will not be able to get a job later. Maybe the student knows better than you, because there are jobs where you can use free software. People who insist on freedom do get employment. The question is, are schools going to say, we won't let you resist non-free software. We won't let you hold on to your freedom. That's the first crucial point. To respect the freedom of the students to say, I'm not going to go in that direction no matter what those businesses tell me to do.
Thank you. you. Andrea, you want to follow up?
Yeah, probably. I'm probably a little more pragmatic than RMS or Rich. I do see that there is some sort of need, at least, when people kind of provide you with devices and you got to use them, right, for various purposes, giving a presentation and there is a computer and you're forced to whatever, do with it. Well, never happens with you, but just in case you don't have your computer with you, might happen. But apart from that, what I see, the crucial point here in the discussion to me is business and I am teaching at the business school here, is it really business who should determine what we are working with, or aren't universities places where we are about to think how we could eventually improve businesses on the one hand and also decide on our own what to use? Me personally, I do use Windows for a very, very, for the reason of laziness, period. That's the only reason, and I do admit that. I do use other programs as well for obvious reasons. I think it is really the universities, and it should be the universities and ministries who should decide or who should think about how we educate our people. If we have our students and pupils learn what business decides that pupils should learn, then I think we're not on the right place. That's what I think about it.
Okay, thank you. Nelson, you're waiting already.
I want to add a couple of ideas there. So first of all, there are so many topics on this subject, and we are touching so many topics on the same time that I'm finding kind of difficult just to select what I want to say. So let's start with education. I don't really know what business is, but it's very common to use the business and the industry as some kind of supernatural entity who decides something. I have actual experience as a teacher and working in the industry of 3D. And one of the things that I had to challenge was the notion in my school with my students were also learning 3D with free software, that they were not going to have a job with that 3D software. And that's, some of them don't get any job. I don't know if that counts. But some of them are working with 3D, free software 3D. It's a software called Blender. I should announce it. I think it's good for you to know it. And they got the job exactly because they were trained to use free software. So when we talk about the business and the industry, we are talking about the big businesses and the big industries, maybe. And if that's only our concern, the big businesses and the big companies, then we are letting down all the small companies who don't have the money to buy the licenses and so on and so on. And the second idea that I want to add here is, if the companies want people that are trained in a specific software, that really frightens me. Because I think that what we need is more ethics and philosophy at school. We don't really need more... We always need fluency literacy, technological literacy, but what we are really missing is discussion about the software at schools. Let me give you a concrete example of this, and then I'll pass it on. A couple of years ago, in 2010, to be more exactly, so a little bit more than a couple of years, I started a project with a couple of colleagues at my school. It's a college of education, so they are adults. They are supposed to be adults, anyway. Hope they are not seeing this. And basically, we started the project because some of them stated that they were using illegal copies, pirated copies, of Firefox. And I was really surprised. How can someone be using a pirated copy of Firefox? It's not even possible. But they truly believed they were using illegal copies of Firefox. So they didn't have a clue. If it comes from the internet, I can get it. If it's for free, it's probably illegal. So it's Firefox. That's what I use, and it's an illegal copy. So we started a program to discuss about what free software is, what open source is, as a methodology, as license, whatever. But we started a project to discuss all this. And I went to schools of all levels. I went to kindergartens to put free software there with computers. And anyone who went to a kindergarten to see kids playing with a computer, they don't really care if it's Windows or not. They are just happy to see a computer there. I totally recommend you to go there, and if you go and if you join some kind of project like this, I totally recommend that you leave your hair grow. I used to have a gray a little bit like Richard there, and because the kids will call you Santa Claus or Gandalf if you're really, really lucky. I was that lucky. But the kids were not really interested if it was Microsoft or not. They were interested in digital literacy. They were interested in using the computer, making pictures, drawing. So we have to make a choice. What kind of software are they going to start to use? And in a way, the problem starts not at the kindergarten, not at those little schools, but at our place. My biggest problem at my school is not with the students, and they are the ones who are going to get a lot of problems with the jobs from the industry. My biggest problem is my colleagues. They are the most biggest challenge I can face, and they are used to all kinds of software, usually not free software. So they are the biggest challenge. They don't want to change. They are afraid of being wrong. They are afraid of being questioned, because all of this, in a way, some people feel like I'm questioning their ethics, and I am, in a way. But that's really difficult for someone to listen, right? If you're using a Mac OS, or if you're using Microsoft, or if you're using, you don't want someone to say, look, that's not the correct way of using the computer. Last piece of story. I only use GNU Linux in my all computers. At school, all the computers have Windows. Even those who were bought with a GNU Linux distribution, Ubuntu. They bought the computers with Ubuntu, they took it off and they installed Windows. It's amazing what people can do, right? So, but what I tell to my students is, I'll finish with this. I truly believe that my computers work better for me if I use GNU Linux as my operating system. I think the performance is better. I have a problem with my graphic card, that's true, but we can talk about it later. But they tend to work better. But I don't use it because it's better for the 3D. Even if the operating system was worse than Windows, or I would still be using GNU Linux in my computers. And then my students will say, what? And then we start discussion. So if it's not better, if it's not to have a better computer, why do you use those kind of that software? Why do you use Blender? Why do you use Debian on your laptop or whatever? I use it because it's the right software. Or in my case, I would say it's the left software. It's a joke. But that's starting the discussion that we have to do, in my opinion. So it's more of a political. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. It's okay. Yeah. Thank you. You want to quickly respond on that one, Martin? Maybe just quickly. Yeah, just briefly, because I want to open up to the audience afterwards.
Okay. It's not the decision of the ministry. It's not the decision of the curriculum what have been taught. Huh? You will not find Microsoft Windows, Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, or any other proprietary software in the curriculum. It's a decision of the teacher, it's a decision of what he teaches, it's a decision of the student what he uses. So what we discuss here is about a mission of the schools, and I'd like to point out that it could not be the mission of schools to turn the whole businesses and what should be used in businesses. That's not the question for schools. That's the question for the businesses. But you have to see that when students exit the schools, and we have to give them chances for the future. And what the businesses request is that students should be able to use what businesses use. Otherwise, you won't get the job. It's a nice idea, And I'm sure there are some jobs that you could afford when you are very used to use free software. But of course, there are much more chances for you to get a job when you are very used to proprietary software. That's a fact.
Okay, we take that as disagreement. You have seen it. Yes, please. There is one first question from the audience, or maybe a remark. Please feel free. And if anybody is hesitating because of the English language we are talking, just post the question in German and we'll translate it. That wouldn't be a problem. So please, yes,
okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you for all the speakers at this point. I would just like to give a comment exactly to this answer. So the first thing that I would like to ask is, why do we still are moving on such a high level of computer education if the low level is broken? So for example, most people who are maintaining their laptop for over years have not cleaned even the CPU cooler, although this should be something that they should know when they come out of school. I have the impression that the education here is more going in the direction of building up work ends who are skilled and in specific programs that the industry in that kind is dictating you. And it's not about building up computer literacy, where people really know how to think, how to use programs, whatever they are. Really coming from a more pragmatic way of view, it doesn't matter which kind of operating system or programs that you use. But you should have a basic knowledge of about what is possible and what you can do. This should be the mission of the education. And then a comment to the business demands it comment. So industry has barely an idea of what they really need. And here I'm talking about personal experience, where you come out and the demands of people are coming mostly from people who don't have really a broad perspective. I know of one guy who lost their job in a water treatment plant because the whole system was based on Windows, and at some point they have chosen to move to a free operating system for reasons of maintenance guys. So this guy lost his job because he has never learned something else. And this is the case for most of industry, because the requests come from people who don't know anything else than the things that they have learned. So that's my comment at this point. The mission of the schools should be to broaden the view, to teach people computer literacy and not train them specific programs. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
I think we have to do both. That's not a binary question of zero and one. Of course, we teach digital literacy, and I mentioned before that our focus was to make it as a very broad spectrum of competences, especially in the lower secondary, which is a completely new curriculum for Austria. So we did not have this until now. To the second point, there is no decision in the curriculum for a proprietary or a free software product. That's a decision of the school, a decision of the teacher, if you like, or in a further way, a decision of the student later on, what to use and what I, by my personal decision, like more. So I absolutely agree with you that our focus must be to teach in a very broad way, to teach what a word processing software is, to teach what a spreadsheet software is, and no matter with which software you teach this. Maybe you will see this in a different way, of course. Yeah, and I agree with you that there should be more free software in our schools, because it's not only free, it's also gratis, as you mentioned in your first slide. So it's free of costs. But on the other hand, and now I repeat what I told you before, it's also a question of the chances. And as far as businesses use proprietary software so widely, we have to use this software also in the schools, as well as the free software.
So I'm sure there are more questions, remarks. Yes, please, Günther Pallava, and then there was...
Questions to Mr. Stallman. Can we be free regarding the program you mentioned when we are not free in other 100 fields in our society?
There are many freedom issues and many issues of justice that arise in life, and they're different. They're separate. So non-free software threatens to take away your freedom from this direction. And meanwhile, there are other issues where your freedom is threatened that have nothing to do with software, or maybe they have a peculiar, specific interaction depending on the details. I'm not saying that free software is going to solve all of life's problems or all of the world, or end all the world's injustices. They've got to be tackled separately. Free software by itself is not going to eliminate global heating, which threatens to destroy society. There may be no computers by the end of this century. Globalized production is extremely vulnerable. Global heating tends to cause wars. It caused the civil war in Syria, for instance, was one of the causes, apparently. And, well, you have enough of those popping up around the world, and globalized manufacturing collapses, and there are no more computers. Well, there's no one solution that I know of, except perhaps put an end to the political power of business. And here we see the political power of business at work. What's the main job, purpose of the state? Well, it's to represent the people, to act for the people, protecting the people's freedom and well-being. And this is why it's this, among one part of that big, broad job is to make sure the schools are leading people to freedom in their computing, along with many other missions that the state has to do, specific missions, which are all in other areas of life, which are also part of the same overall broad mission. So I think you're basically right in the sense that you see that just having free software is not going to make everything good in life. But on the other hand, it does protect you from one threatening injustice, and we've got to do that as well as deal with all the other wrongs and needs in life. We should, when the state, when businesses are all caught in a trap of promoting the use of Windows, well, it's whose mission is it to change that? It's the state's mission as well as our mission.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Hello. I have a similar question to the, or similar comment like the first one. So the argument was that students coming from a school won't get a job if they don't know Microsoft Word because they're taught LibreOffice or something like that. So my question or comment is, if a student leaves school having learned LibreOffice or how to use it at least, and then is not able to use Microsoft Office or any other document preparation system, doesn't that mean that the teacher has clearly failed? I mean, this is a similar comment as before. I think that teachers should teach concepts rather than concrete, like abstract concepts rather than concrete implementations.
Well, I'll start with last comment. I totally agree with you. Yeah, that's. It's not easy though. It's not easy when you talk about software inside a classroom and the students. Let me give you a couple of examples to add to this discussion, and then I'll try to connect with. We don't make anyone choose this blend or that blend of software. Blah blah. You can. You are all free to choose whatever you want. The ministry, or I'm not talking about Austria. I don't know Austria ministry or the case. So I'm using Portugal as a reference, Europe as a reference, the world as a reference, not specific of Austria. When the students come to my school, most of them only know proprietary software. It's the common mainstream software. And we already heard one of our colleagues here saying that she uses because it's more convenient. So if we are going to let people choose, for instance, in a kindergarten or in a high school, people are going to choose what they are more convenient with. And they are going to choose the software that they will tend to think about what kind of support I'm going to have with this. And for instance, at my school, if the students want some kind of help with Linux EduRoam connection, they come to me, not with the computer guys, at computer engineer guys, technical support. They don't do Linux. You are all free to choose whatever software you want for your laptops, of course. But if you want Linux, you're on your GNU Linux. It was fast. But if you want to use GNU Linux, you're on your own. And this is a challenge. Because it's not cost-free, I'm sorry, it's not. It cost me a lot of time all these years. And you wouldn't, I'm sure some of you can imagine, but most probably wouldn't imagine the amount of time I have to put to help other folks to use GNU Linux or the software. Saying this, I want to add something else also. I tend to teach more arts programs, and I teach right now, one of the things that I teach is 3D animation. And I only use free software, so I'm using Blender. But my students are not obliged to use Blender. They can use whatever they want. Of course, at my class, they are all using Blender. And they are all using Blender because I'm using Blender, so they feel more comfortable in using Blender. But at the same school, there is another teacher who uses another very well-known proprietary software, which I'll not name it. I'm not going to give that advertisement for free. But they are made to use it. They at that class, they have to use that software, otherwise they are not going to give, they are not going to get any classes. So I think that maybe one of the reasons why some of my students even get jobs after the finishing their program using proprietary software. So we're talking about people who did their training, for instance, with Blender, and they are working with Cinema or whatever software it is, and they. I tried to teach them about concepts, about processes, about what modeling is, about what topology is, and all of that can be transferred through other softwares. I admit that it's in other cases it's not that easy, but for me it is. That's what I do. And I totally agree that if a person that goes to the market and meets the big businesses, and the big businesses have one job, and that job requires that he only works with Word or Excel or whatever. If he doesn't know, if learning with LibreOffice means that he's not going to get that job, it doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense. And yes, the school is failing in that sense. Of course it is.
It's about the concept. I absolutely agree with you. It's about the concept, no matter with which software you teach the concept. It's the same than learning a programming language, coding. Yeah. So no matter if I learn it with Java, C Sharp, or any other language, it's about the concept. So I think the point should be that the teacher should have the freedom, and it's also a question of freedom, what to teach. But it should be also a part of the class, part of the subject that have been taught to also to teach about the concept of free software, and that's part of the curriculum.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe also again one note on businesses and markets and whatsoever, because we tend to talk a lot in a very particular world, which is the industrial or market world, whereas there's the civic world as well, which is at least as important and to consider. But also from that perspective, we are living in an era where startups, everyone is doing any sort of startup, which to me is sort of a hype maybe. But what I'm seeing, what people are doing and what people are up to, there's so many innovative and creative people, and they work with all type of software and technological tools. So why kind of forcing them into anything? I do think that it is important to offer giving opportunities and being and also offer some sort of reflection of the type of knowledge that you're gaining here. It's not just about learning about tools. Education to me is educating people to understand the world and making it better, if you really want it very abstract. This is what I think. So there's much more to that. And with every technology that I'm teaching, you're also teaching ethics that comes with it, or a particular moral. What am I going to do with technology? It matters a lot what I'm doing with whatever tool I have at my hand. And this is something I find really, really important. So, but to say, and or to make the point, is that business is changing as well, and people are going to have many different kind of jobs. So it's not that we are forced into one particular job in one multinational corporation. That's by far not the truth, and that's by far not our future. At least let's hope for that. That's what I think.
The biggest political issue of our time is who will rule, the people or the businesses? The political power of business is being used to change society, to send more and more of the wealth to the richest few. And what they do with that power is control various areas of society in ways that benefit the richest few. The fossil fuel companies are working in every place to prevent moving to renewable energy. They control various governments, including the US, the UK, Canada, and Australia in this area, so that they are changing laws every month to make it harder to stop using fossil fuels. And this, of course, can kill you. But this is just an example of what happens in every area of life. So we need to be thinking not of how to do what businesses want, but how to remove their power so it doesn't matter so much what they want. We should, now turning back to the specific area of education and software, which is a lot narrower, if one person graduates from school knowing how to use free software and not knowing how to use Windows, and supposing that person couldn't just pick up Windows in 10 minutes, and supposing that person is willing to pick up Windows, I suppose that there might be some business, some jobs that where the narrow-minded managers would not hire that person. Well, I can't deny that. And they would just do so. But if the state decided to teach free software because this educates free citizens, and there were hundreds of thousands of people graduating who had learned how to use LibreOffice and not learned how to use Microsoft Office, the businesses would say, we better adapt to this. So you have to realize that if there's a policy that directs people towards free software, the businesses that today are saying we need them to know Windows would say, we're going to work with them because we've got to work with the people who are graduating. So you shouldn't underestimate the ability to change the world by directing students towards freedom rather than directing them towards being under the power of Microsoft or Apple or whichever.
Okay. So, yes, we have time for more questions, remarks.
So I just want to remark on what you said about the freedom of teachers. So there's this saying that a person's freedom ends where another person's freedom starts. And I believe if you say, well, it's a teacher's freedom to force the students to do whatever to use whatever software I teach, then I think you're kind of infringing on the freedom of the students quite a bit.
That's the
directly to you?
Yeah, but actually it is the freedom, or it has to be the freedom of the teacher to decide what he does and what he teaches. And the curriculum gives the objective, gives the learning path for the teachers, and they have to follow this learning path. But continuing this learning path, they have this freedom. That's a matter of fact, yeah, to decide what to teach. But maybe one point I think what we did not discuss until now is the question about data. The question about programs and free software of programs, okay, this has been discussed now widely, but what about data? What about proprietary software? Like you mentioned it in your speech, Facebook and social media in general.
Those are not programs. Yeah, proprietary programs like Windows send data, personal data.
Yeah, but additionally, we use, and that's our own decision, we use social media platforms. That's proprietary software. I don't know what this software does. And I don't know what the data does and what they do with this data. I think that will be a much more important question than the software question.
May I respond?
Yeah, quickly,
well,
we have two
they're
questions.
Different questions, but they're overlapping.
Yes.
If people are used of Facebook, because Facebook has no users, it only has used, those who are willing to be used by Facebook, they're handing over lots of personal data about themselves and about other people. This is why I am not a used of Facebook and never was. This is why I ask people not to post photos that show me, because Facebook can recognize people by their faces or the backs of their heads. So I say, don't help Facebook learn, accumulate data about me. But this is not about what software you're running. You can talk to Facebook with free software, but Facebook will still use you, but not through proprietary software. However, Microsoft will get data about you through proprietary software. Google, if you're using a Chromebook, if there are schools that give out a Chromebook to every student, and Google is collecting their personal data, starting with their names. A school, to respect the student's privacy, must never make an account in the name of a student with any company. And it doesn't matter what contract that company has signed with the schools, because those contracts are always deceptive. They appear to promise to respect students' privacy, and they're always written so that in practice the company doesn't have to respect the student's privacy. Now, the privacy issue is not equal to the proprietary software issue. They're different. But proprietary software is typically made to spy on people, and that includes whatever proprietary operating system the school might think of using, as a practical statement about today's software. It's not it's not impossible that someday there could be a proprietary system that didn't spy. And there's no universal law that says every proprietary program must spy. I'm sure there's some that don't. But in practice, all the major proprietary programs that people use do spy. All the proprietary operating systems a school might run do spy. And in practice, the only way you can tell it doesn't spy is if it's free software. So you might happen to believe a certain proprietary program doesn't spy, but unless the users have control over the program, they can't make sure it doesn't spy.
The point is you don't know it.
Exactly.
So when I download an application, an app on my smartphone, I can't be sure if it spies my personal data.
Actually, practically
or
speaking,
not.
You can be sure it does spy.
Yeah.
They almost all do.
Yes.
The quick.
One sentence. The big challenge that we have at the moment is that we use such apps for learning outcomes, or for that is one of our main question, I guess, for creating a learning path. And these applications, they spy learning outcomes from students, and we don't know what they do with this data. That's a big challenge. That's
well,
a really big challenge.
Well, only if the students run those apps.
We don't know the apps because the teachers decide the apps by themselves, so they do not tell us which apps they use. We can't prove it. So it is unpredictable what will be done with this data, and look to the future. So if a student is 14 and there will be created some kind of learning results that the student has in mathematics or in foreign languages or in German or in geographic or whatsoever, then all this data can be combined and you get a picture of this of the student. Yeah, profile, exactly. So that can be used for profiling. That can be used for predictions. Will this student be able to get a university study or a university place a couple of years later?
Yeah. Or it could be used to predict which party that student will vote for, or what sort of advertising that student might respond to. I think there needs to be a law that no school will suggest to a student the use of any digital system that violates the student's privacy. And violates the student's privacy means that there is not, that it hasn't been verified that no data about the student will leave the school's premises.
Can I add something? There are some last couple, not Obama elections, but last couple of elections in the U.S. were decided for 100,000 votes and 200,000 votes, and there are a couple of studies that show that Facebook posts could make more people go voting. So the study, I can give you the references if you need it, but it's easy to find it. But the idea is that using a post in Facebook could turn into 300,000 people or so going to vote when the election was decided by less than that. And in most, why am I calling this, evoking this? Is because it looks like education is trying to solve this by teaching how to press the button like we have to teach our kids how to press the button like. That's our solution. And the problem is way before this. The problem is a political problem. The problem is ethical problem again. I want to make this. I'm going to repeat this all over again if needed, because I think that's what we are really needed in our schools for. Schule 4.0 or programs that intend to progress digital literacy at schools. We cannot forget that half of the people in this planet don't use the internet. And the ones that are using the internet, they are not all alike. Like, for instance, in Portugal, the minimum wage is next year is going to be 580 euros. iPhone 10 is 1,200 euros. So we still have a huge gap, and the problem is not new, at least to me, in my view. The problem is not new. Sometimes it sounds a little bit kitsch. Sometimes it sounds a little bit naive. I have a lot of colleagues who say, oh, you are naive. You just want to change the world and make this world a better place and so on. But yeah, they are the ones, most of the time, trusting their data to Google or to Facebook. And they are doing a leap of faith. But I'm the one being naive. So this is a challenge, and it's not going to be solved today, of course, but we need to discuss more, I think, more about competences, yes, skills, yes. It's to me, it's not really true that people can choose freely the operating software if the, well, I'm going to use the word, if the market is rigged by default, so they don't really have the freedom to choose. They don't really know they can choose for starters. That's at least where I am. So that's it.
Okay, so we've got two questions right now. One from Petra Missomelius and Justus Piata. So we start with Petra, please.
Of privacy, that was my question. Rather, I would like to ask to Martin Bauer how he thinks. Can we meet this challenge to to give to schools and to teachers the competence to be careful of this privacy issue as one step that is really urgent now. And maybe if I'm allowed to ask another question to Richard, we are now discussing in Europe, in the German-speaking countries, something like the certification of open educational resources. You already said you are skeptical about this, and I would like to hear your idea you have about this.
Yeah, concerning the privacy perspective and data protection rules, we challenge the Datenschutzgrundverordnung of the European Union, which will be active from the 25th of May 2018, and that is really a quite a big challenge. I was in an event yesterday concerning that point and about privacy and data protection, and especially concerning the schools. That means that 120,000 teachers will have to decide how to treat with personal data of pupils and of students. And that's a big communication challenge. That's a big challenge of understanding, of reflection. So, that's a very short time. And it covers whole of Europe. So that's a European Richtlinie, so a European guideline for all the countries.
Richard is coming in a minute and answer your question for sure. Maybe we can follow up with your...
Just one second. I'm going to add something. Last year I was in a conference and there was a teacher there presenting a wonderful project with primary school students, 10 years old, with Facebook. And at the end, I asked two things. I asked... Are you sure that 10-year-olds can be on Facebook? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Are you sure that 10-year-olds can be on Facebook? That was question number one. And question number two was, aren't you really afraid that you are somehow commodifying personal data of those students without them really understand what that is? And she couldn't understand the question. So this is a really big problem. She couldn't even start to understand the problem. You know, you understand what I mean? The discussion is really difficult sometimes.
So, you're just in time. it's in front of you.
Yes.
Yeah. Petra's question. Yeah.
Regarding privacy in general, the European Union directives are thoroughly inadequate to protect our privacy from the systematic schemes to profile people. We need laws requiring systems to be designed so that they don't collect any more data than is absolutely necessary for the main purpose of the system, which means it should be illegal to say, we're going to add a social feature, and that feature won't work unless we collect data, so that means we can collect data. No. If the main purpose, say, is to sell people a download of something, well, it should enable them to pay anonymously and collect nothing, and any finding out of who is buying should be something people can optionally do. And that, too, should be designed to collect the least possible personal data about any given people. If they're going to rent bicycles on the streets, well, that's a nice thing to do. It can be done in such a way that they don't know who took out a bicycle unless that person fails to return it. That's the only case in which they need to know, assuming that you have to subscribe to the system to be able to participate. Well, all they'll know is some subscriber took this bicycle and returned it on time, so there's no problem. This is what we've got to do to avoid tracking people's movements. And for more about this, look at gnu.org/philosophy/surveillance-vs-democracy.html. But what was the second half of your question, the part that was specifically for me?
Open educational resources.
Oh, yes. If you look at software, open source is basically an amoral term that's almost equivalent to free software at the practical level. If a program is open source, it's almost certainly free software. So the main difference is whether you raise it as an ethical issue or as a purely convenience issue. But in education, it's different. They've adopted a definition of open which is considerably weaker than free. It doesn't include the four freedoms. It's not equivalent to them either. And for more information, look at stallman.org/articles/onlineeducation.html. A lot of so-called open educational resources are released under a Creative Commons license that has a flaw that I don't see how to fix. It's the non-commercial share-alike license. It's not free because of the non-commercial restriction. And look at the article for more about that particular license and its problems. But the point is that the general argument that is why software should be free applies to all the works that exist to do a job. Not all works exist to do a job. Art and fiction, poetry, they don't exist to do jobs. They're to be appreciated. And then there are works that present the arguments or testimony. Well, they have a contribution to make to society, but it isn't functional. They're not tools you do a job with. So the arguments for freedom that the users have to control the work don't apply. But with a work that's designed so that people use it to do something with, those works the users deserve to have control over. Now, teaching and learning are practical jobs. So the works that are made to teach with or learn with, they should be under the user's control. And that means they've got to be released under free licenses. Now, any state that's developing teaching or learning materials can make a tremendous contribution to the world by adopting the systematic policy that they shall be free. And of course, freedom includes the freedom to translate it to other languages, so one set of such works can become useful around the world.
Okay, so Justus, please.
The discussion has moved on a bit since I raised my hand. But I want to get back to the issue of the freedom of teachers to make specific choices in school. I disagree with the view that teachers should have the choice of teaching specific software products in school, because that sets up students on the wrong track. What's the job of, what's the goal of education? The goal of education is to form competent citizens, to help them make informed choices, to understand the real underlying issues. So, for example, do we teach children to obey the law? Well, of course not. That's not the goal, right? They have to understand how societies work and why we need laws and what the processes are to make laws. Do we teach them to vote at the next federal election? Of course not. We need to teach them how democracy works, how the political process functions, how to decide which party to vote for. Or a completely different example, math education in high school. What I observe again and again is that students are taught how to apply specific formulae to specific problems. That is wrong. They don't understand anything at all. This is like teaching a specific word processor in high school. They don't understand the underlying issues. They are not helped to make informed choices, but they are locked up in a specific direction that they don't know how to break out of. So if teachers have the freedom to make such teaching choices, obey the law, go vote, learn Microsoft Word, and apply a specific mathematical format to a specific problem, then something is broken and needs to be fixed.
Um, especially in the vocational schools, you have this other objective too, as I mentioned. So you are right, yes, in a conceptual way. It would be correct to go for, as you mentioned it, but on the other hand, and I told you this before, I see it as a very important role of the schools to prepare students for their work and to give them better chances to get a job. And as long as we have Microsoft Windows and Microsoft Office, for instance, as well as Adobe products and whatsoever in businesses, then they get better chances to get a job when they learned how to use those programs. That does not mean that this should be the only one. So the conceptual way of learning should be the kernel of what we do and what we teach. But the second point is, and especially in the vocational schools or in the professional schools of business, for example, or for the technical schools that we have in Austria, it is important to teach what students need later when they enter a job, because they will have better job options and better chances to get a job.
There's of course truth in what you say, but they will get even better jobs if they have the fundamental underlying competences and can make the choices, and they won't be the first ones to get fired once the company moves to a different product.
There are two more questions. One at the back was first, and then you again.
I'm sorry. Okay. Isn't it detrimental to the students if the teacher only knows like one language, so or one program? So if he knows more things, he can teach more things. So why only leave the teacher the choice? I'm sorry. Which program he uses? So if he only knows how to use Word, he will obviously teach Word. But if he knows both things, he should be able to teach both things. My point is, it's a teacher's job to educate the students. So take teachers who know everything and can teach everything. Show both options.
The job of the teachers is to make students available to learn by themselves and to show the learning path, so to lead them through this learning path. That does not mean that the teacher should always teach one program or another program. So it is about concepts. It is about, as we mentioned before, it is about conceptual learning. So the teacher, in case of programming languages, for example, will decide for one of those languages. However, it is about the concept. So I learned, when I was 12 years old, I learned BASIC as a programming language. I cannot use BASIC anymore because it's not really used anymore. But it was no problem to learn other languages like Pascal or C and C sharp or Java later on. So it is about the concept. So when I learned the concept, when I know what to do with a spreadsheet program, when I know what to do with a database program, when I know about modeling a database, I can use this with any other program, no matter if it is a proprietary software or if it is a free software.
But then there is no reason to use proprietary software, right? So if you can use the concept with every program, why use a proprietary software?
It is about the chances, because...
But the concept is the same.
It is not really the mainstream outside there. So when you go outside and you apply for a job, and you are only used to use free software, you have a learning path to achieve this kind of... Like you mentioned it with the DigiCheck. So it will take you time to get the same deepness of knowledge in a program that you learned in school. And the question that we have to answer is, should we teach programs that will be used in businesses from only, 10 or 5% of the businesses or in offices, or should we teach the other 90%? And that's not a mission for the school. Again, that's not the mission for the school to overrule the whole world of business. We can't make that.
So, yes, Richard, please. We have
free
three more questions.
Programs and proprietary programs are not morally equivalent. It is the mission of the school because it's the mission of the state in general to spread freedom and protect freedom. When somebody has a sneaky scheme to suck people under his power, and this, for instance, it could be Microsoft or Apple or Adobe or Google, it's the mission of the state to protect people from that.
No, absolutely not.
And
I'm sorry.
When it's a matter of teaching people to use this program or that program, well, if they're morally equivalent, then I agree. There's no reason why the school should prefer this or that. Whatever is convenient for whatever reason would be better. But when you're comparing, say, Microsoft Office and LibreOffice, they're not morally equivalent. Whoever uses Microsoft Office is ceding freedom. And whoever uses LibreOffice, that person's freedom is respected by the software. They're not morally equivalent. There's a moral reason for this choice.
If it would be dangerous to use proprietary software, it would be forbidden. But it, no, but it isn't forbidden because it is not dangerous. It is a question of a mission. Yes, I agree with you. But it is not the mission for a state to steer. No, not in this case. Not in this case. I would agree if we discuss tobacco and tobacco use. Yes, because that's dangerous for my body. But it's not dangerous for my body to use proprietary software. It is my decision. It is my freedom to decide what to use.
Well, it's your freedom to smoke tobacco as well. Tobacco is not an immediate poison the way some things are. There are things that you, if you take it, it will kill you right away. Tobacco won't do that, but it is deleterious to your life, and it's addictive. And the same is true for many proprietary programs. Some are designed to be addictive. Some are not addictive, but they do harm your freedom. They're not all the same. But protecting people's freedom is the mission of the state. Even protecting people's freedom from tempting things that would lead them to throw their freedom away. I wouldn't prohibit them, just as I wouldn't prohibit the use of tobacco. I'm very much anti-tobacco. Tobacco killed my father. Tobacco killed his father. I campaign against tobacco. I do not advocate prohibiting even dangerous drugs because the prohibition is dangerous. And I don't advocate prohibiting the use of proprietary software either. But just as it's the state's mission to discourage tobacco smoking, to lead people away from it without prohibiting it, so the state should lead people away from proprietary software without prohibiting its use.
Okay, I have to intervene at this point because there are three more questions or statements. Yes, please, you were first.
I have just a comment and a question. So the comment is that since I was transitioning away from the proprietary software and also looking around in the free software world, the perspectives of finding a job have dramatically increased. And just one of the examples is the job offers at Heise, where you find also lots of offers there. And I would like to have every student who comes out of the school also to have that perspective. That is just a comment at this side. And the question is going to the teacher. Could you please tell me if a fairy tale would come up and from the perception of the teacher, not of the free software activist, but from the teacher, if the fairy tale would grant you one wish, what would you change? Would you inspire students, teach the colleagues something differently?
Oh boy. could I ask to the fairy tale to give me my choice would be to ask for two instead of just one choice. I think that it's clear now that we are not just discussing software. It's not just only about software. We're discussing society, and how it should work, and what are the priorities of the state, and all of that is in stake right now. So I would say that as a teacher, I really love my job, although I'm in a process of kind of transitioning to to work also less as a teacher and more in the private sector. But as a teacher, I would put my students first. Saying this, I have to say again that the biggest challenge to me is not the students, it's my colleagues. They are truly what it's being difficult to accept. So I would expect people with, I'm sorry about your age, you will come to my age once in a couple of years, but I would expect people, my colleagues, to be a little bit more mature and to think and be a little bit more worried, and they are not. Usually they are not. They use proprietary software because it's convenient and because that's what other people do, and that's because human beings are very creative to justify their choices and to make all kind of balanced. But there is an imbalance going on. That's what frightens me. And let me add just another short story. It will be fast. This year, in July, I guess, there was a small change in the Portuguese legislation, copyright legislation. This is just to show how unbalanced this world is going on between those who own and those who don't own. Let's put it simply like this. And the choice and the change was, until now, and until July, actually, until June, July, copyright law in Portugal would allow me to make private copies, so I could buy a CD and make a copy of the CD as a backup, but the same law wouldn't allow me to break DRM. So it was a no solution situation. The law gives me the right to make a copy, but the device doesn't allow me to make that copy, and the law doesn't allow me to break the DRM. This is how unbalanced things were going on. And finally, in July, it was a major victory. We were able to change a little bit of the definition of what DRM is right now in Portugal. And right now, DRM cannot, it's still there, unfortunately, but cannot be used to limit the private copies or fair use copies that we can use. So it was a very small change in the definition. We believe that it's going to have a huge impact, for instance, in schools. But again, most of the problems is teachers don't really know about this and don't really care about this. They are not. It's a job of discussion and critical thinking. It's more of a philosophical than a technological thing right now. That's what I believe. So when I see all these programs talking about digital competencies, yes, they are correct. Of course, it is needed. But I see education not as 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. That means that the first ones didn't work or something. It's like a rolling release. Education is a work in progress. It's always in beta. I don't know. You can choose the metaphor you want. But it's something that we need continuously to work on. It's not going to be just one project that's going to fix it. And one of the things that we are not doing, I think, globally, not Austria, not Portugal, globally we are not doing well, is, again, I'm going to pull the digital inclusion theme of this, is we are leaving behind, we are forgetting about half of the population of the world. They are not on the internet. They will be. They will be sooner or later, and what we are looking at our bellies, and we are looking at our states and our countries, and we are forgetting that the companies that we are creating in the West world, in the Western world, they are looking at other parts of the world, and they are looking at how they are going to use those 50% of people. And we are not really worried about it until it gets here. That's for me one of the things that is frightening. So I have a lot to ask to that fairy tale, to that fairy. I have a lot of things to ask. It will be difficult to choose just one.
To boil it down to the point, so in a nutshell, you would start with educating the teachers so that they have the broader view and are using
right
major decisions for the students and not being stuck with the single thing that they know.
Right now, the first thing I would do, I would try to empower the teachers to create projects like the ones that we are trying to run right now at my school, and those things can spread. Without the teachers, it will be sabotage all over the place.
Okay. So
was that simple enough?
Okay.
Two sentences?
Well, Justus is waiting now. One sentence.
One sentence.
Not two.
It is hard enough to bring teachers to this digital point. And the digital divide, you mentioned that's also the realistic world that we focus on in Austria. So to bring the teachers to that point, to use digital material, digital media in their lessons, that's the hard job. That's the really hard job. And the fairy tale, yes, that's a big vision.
So now, Justus, again, please.
Thank you.
So this is really all about empowerment and the education necessary to be able to make informed choices. So a few minutes ago, there was this argument that if we want to teach concepts, it doesn't really matter whether we teach the concepts using proprietary software A or free software B. But this is not true, because the playing field is not level. If we use proprietary software A, then the students will not have the empowerment to make informed choices about proprietary and free software, because they won't know about free software, simply. You go to people in the street and ask them about computers, and they have a mental picture that is full of proprietary software. They don't understand that free software exists and what it does and why it can have a lot of potential benefit for them and can empower them to enjoy much greater freedom than they currently do, because they don't know about it. And knowledge is power, right? Regimes can keep their population in check by limiting information they give them, and so on. So it is the responsibility of the democratic society to empower their citizens to understand these issues and make their own informed choices. So it's the schools that have to proactively level the playing field here.
Yes, and as I said, it is part of the curriculum, but the challenge for us is how to bring the teachers to that point. And that's a long journey. Don't forget this. We have a lot of teachers, they are not really digital now. So maybe they use programs to prepare for their lessons, but they don't use digital devices or digital media, digital tools in their classes, in the school. That's the gap that we have to jump over.
Okay.
Well, maybe a very quick answer to that, because I sometimes feel sort of overwhelmed by the sheer abundance of technological developments, and I sometimes feel kind of like it's very hard to catch up. But as a matter of fact, my sister is 60, over 60, and she uses all kinds of software, and it's when I look at the discussion sometimes, yes, of course it's a moral choice, but if you switch between the two softwares that we are basically using, let's put it very practical, at school, what do teachers teach? They teach Word and they teach some Excel spreadsheets and they teach PowerPoint. Using LibreOffice is no different at all. There is no point in not trying it out, because it's so similar in terms of learning that software. It takes you nothing to learn it. So I don't see the point, and I also do not think that teachers are not computer literate, but I might be wrong about that. It's just my little point on that.
We speak of digital inclusion as if that were an automatic good. I disagree. Inclusion in a digital society can be good or bad. Depends whether that digital society is just or unjust. So I work to make sure it's just. If we don't make sure that digital society is just, we shouldn't be working for digital inclusion at the same time as allowing it to be inclusion in injustice, inclusion in subjugation. So the two have to go hand in hand. including people in the digital society and making sure the digital society respects the freedom of those included in it. That's not the case now for the most part. I have chosen to exclude myself from most of what most people do on the internet. Those are things I would never consider doing because they are non-free software and they spy on people and they have other malicious functionalities too. But I'm just protected by my rule that says if it's non-free, I don't use it. I won't run the apps on a smartphone. They're almost always non-free. And I won't run the smartphone either because it's non-free software. So we've got to do something about that. If we want digital inclusion to be a desirable thing, let's campaign for the various kinds of freedom in the digital society.
That's almost a final remark, but we have one more question. That's the last one from the audience. Now, Andreas Beinsteiner, please.
My point has mainly already been made by Justus. But just one thing I maybe would like to add is that this question of empowerment and education as something that empowers people, it's a lot about getting the insights that things are not natural. It's about denaturalization, about understanding that we are exposed to an environment that can be changed. And so the kind of connection of this issue with privacy and with the software is that a lot of people nowadays, they just take the digital environment like it was a natural environment. So, okay, there's Facebook, and if I want to communicate, then I kind of need to use this. And so the advantage of free software, apart from the moral issue, is also that it kind of gives you this idea of denaturalization, that information technologies are actually things that can be changed, and that that can be shaped according to the demands that you have.
Andrea, software markets, hardware markets as natural environment?
What's natural, what's not natural? It's a very interesting point because as I see it, it's all a habitat where we're using for various different things to participate, to connect with, or whatever we're doing here. But it's interesting because what particularly in my area is regaining importance is because people feel that they are in increasingly in some sort of living in a technologized world, is that they see human values even more. So we speak about it, rehumanization of many things as an oxymoron, rehumanizing the digital space, which is much more about not the technical things, but more about how people socialize, how people talk to each other, how they collaborate online. You have social bots out there. You have IBM Watson. You cannot even be sure to talk to a person or whether a person is talking back to you, right, nowadays. And even I could not. I can guess if I have a comparison of natural talk and the bots talk, I could guess what's the human voice and what is not. So I don't know if this is what you meant to say here and if that answers your question, but I do see that in this space, it is all about what we do with it and how we act in these spaces. And talking about digital inclusion, to me, is also a term which is a little perilous because it sounds so inclusive. But from a sociological perspective, the elite will always have means and ensure that some people will be excluded from their world, from being rich, from being included in reaping the benefits of technology and reaping the benefits of businesses and reaping all sorts of benefits. So to me, inclusion is not inclusion per se, but It's just a term for let the other people also have what we are having, right? So to me, this is not all good.
So, thank you. I want to come to the end of this panel discussion and invite our panelists for a final brief remark in view of the discussion we had and being aware of digital inclusion as something ambivalent. In many countries in Europe, we have it on the agenda, on governmental agendas. Also, it's the digital roadmap in Austria, for example, but also in Switzerland and other countries. It plays an important role. And the ambivalence isn't discussed that widely. If it's about implanting dependencies or if it's about enabling participation and so on, the whole agenda. To sum it up, very briefly, final statements. I want to start with Nelson, then Martin, and then go the round, please. So
I'll try to sum it up, picking up on the digital inclusion, because it's the last theme. To me, digital inclusion is a way to make people all around the world more able to participate. But that's not what's going on right now. I think right now what digital inclusion means is let's create a bigger market share for advertising. And this is a huge fight. It's a huge fight. So, for instance, my last words in here, I'm not going to die soon, hope, would be my choice right now as a teacher when I get back to Portugal, I'll be in class Monday. It's not going to be classes about technology, but the best thing that I can think about a class about technology is not to teach how to press a button. It will be, let's discuss about net neutrality, for instance. That's a huge problem right now. And that's, I think, the best way I can help my students to feel more empowered. That's the word that I would like to end.
We work very hard to try to close the digital divide for us in Austria, concerning teachers, concerning students, and concerning the whole society, if you think further. On the other hand, and that's my summary for this discussion, to have the freedom of having the choice what to use is very often an illusion. You work in a company, you have to follow the policy of the company. It is not your decision what to install and what to use. For me, as a father of two children, it is not my decision which application I can use to communicate with my children. It is WhatsApp. Just one example. And so, you will find a lot of examples that will not give you the choice what to do. Theoretically, yes. Theoretically, you can say, I don't buy a smartphone because that's not a free operating system. But on the other hand, if you decide for not having a smartphone, then you cannot communicate with your friends, you cannot communicate with your company, you cannot communicate with your clients. It restricts your life. And that's the other hand. So I think theoretically it is your decision, practically it's not. Thank you for being here. It was a great discussion. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, Andrea?
Yeah, maybe as a final note, I have been talking about digital inclusion. I myself don't really know what it is, but that's another story. I have to educate myself. but those terms are always very, very wishy-washy. But I do think, from my perspective as a university teacher, and I'm teaching students who eventually, and I'm old enough to know quite a lot of students who have made it into you know, the boards and CEOs or run their own companies, and I'm talking to them quite often, and they come back to the university and tell me, hey, but now I really know what you mean when we talked about this and that issue. And I do know that they are running the businesses, so they are the future when it comes to business, and they are the ones to decide how they are working. So to me, it is important. I do know that you, many people, including me, we are in sort of a straitjacket to a certain extent. But if we don't teach people who eventually become to decide what we are using, then we will just simply prolong what we are doing over and over and over again. So to me, this is some sort of, I do take this responsibility to educate students to not just apply technologies, and this is probably my final word, but to make them aware that there are these technologies available, and that it is our responsibility to talk about those technologies, to reflect what we are actually doing with them. And yes, we do have a choice. Some decisions can be taken without Excel spreadsheets, right? For sure. And this is sort of what my goal is when I do discuss with students. Educating people to me means reflecting about what we are doing and what we're doing to ourselves and to the world and to society. And thank you again for having me here as well.
We have just heard an example of the idea that you're powerless, you're a leaf floating on the ocean, don't even think of trying to change the world, just surrender and let businesses push you around. But in fact, you have influence on others just as they have influence on you. And if you care about freedom, you can decide to use your influence in the direction that you want things to go rather than to support what companies are pushing people to do. How do companies succeed nowadays? They succeed by setting up engines to push the current of society in a certain direction, and it sweeps people along. People who may not be thinking about whether this is good or bad for them in various ways, such as their freedom. That's what happens with WhatsApp. Other people may try to communicate with you with WhatsApp, and you can then either go along with them, in which case you become part of the same pressure, which becomes even stronger to press on others, or you can say no, and then you make that pressure weaker, and thus you help shield others. So I make this decision consciously. I don't have a portable phone. I don't believe that the state should know where I am all the time. I don't believe anyone should be able to turn anything I carry into a full-time listening device, which is done with portable phones because they have proprietary software with a universal backdoor. So I couldn't possibly run WhatsApp even if I were willing to, which I'm not because it's proprietary software. So anyone that wanted to talk with me with WhatsApp would discover that's impossible. And they can't possibly convince me to change because I'm the stubbornest person in the world. So the result is I am using my piece of influence, because I have some just as you have some, I'm using my influence against the non-free systems and the surveillance systems. You can do it too. And you won't change the whole world by your practices, just as I can't change it all with mine. But you can decide whether to contribute to freedom or to business power. And that makes a difference, especially since you won't be the only one. So don't let your children or your relatives or your employer or a possible employer push you into running non-free software. And if you're a teacher, don't teach any non-free software. If you're setting up the rules and curriculum for schools, make sure that the schools don't add to this current that's been designed to push people to non-free software. Set up a digital divide in your own life. a divide between the practices that respect your freedom and the practices that would make you give it up. That's what you have to do if you want any freedom at all in digital activities. Make a digital divide in your life. Teach yourself, if it would take away my freedom, I'm saying no.
So, thank you very much. My special thanks to all of the panelists coming far from Portugal, from Vienna, from Boston, Andrea, from our university here. Thanks a lot for your contributions, for the controversy discussions. It's been inspiring, enlightening for me, and I think for you too. Thanks for you, for your questions, for your contributions from the audience as well. And yeah, have a nice weekend.